Welcome, and thank you for standing by. All participants will be on a listen-only mode until the question-and-answer session of today's call. At that time, you may press star, then one to ask a question from the phone lines. I would also like to inform all parties that the call is being recorded. If you have any objections, you may disconnect at this time. I would now like to turn the call over to your host, Ms. Jenny Lyons. Thank you, ma'am. You may begin.
Good afternoon, everyone. My name is Jenny Lyons, and I'm with Public Affairs here at NOAA Fisheries. Today, NOAA Fisheries is announcing some great news that conservation efforts are paying off for humpback whales, and that success is showcased in today in changes for how humpback whales are listed, or not, under the Endangered Species Act. Those changes filed in the Federal Register just minutes ago, and to talk about the changes, I have the privilege of introducing Angela Soma to you right now. Angela is the Chief of NOAA Fisheries Endangered Species Division within our Office of Protected Resources. She's going to provide a brief summary of our news, and then we will open for questions. We also have Marta Namak, NOAA Fisheries National Endangered Species Act Listing Coordinator, available to answer questions during this time. And just a reminder, though, this call is for working media only. If you are not a member of the press, you are welcome to listen, but please do not ask questions. This time really is reserved for reporters, and if you got our media advisory about this call, you should have the title and spelling of both of our experts, but if you did not, feel free to email me at Jenny, J-E-N-N-I-E, dot Lyons, L-Y-O-N-S, at NOAA, N-O-A-A, dot gov, and I will get that to you as well. So with that, I'm going to turn the floor over to Angela. Angela, please go ahead.
Sure. Thank you, Jenny. Well, as Jenny mentioned, we have some very good news today. Humpback whales had been considered an endangered species under the Endangered Species Act since its inception, just over 40 years ago. And after conducting an extensive scientific status review of the status of humpback whales, today we are announcing a decision in which we are identifying 14 different populations of humpback whales. And we have found after that very thorough scientific review that 9 of those populations no longer need the protections of the Endangered Species Act, and we have found that they are not warranted to be listed as endangered species henceforward. We did take extensive public comment on the rule, and we do appreciate all of the information that we received. We've also updated some of the information from the time we issued our initial status review report, and we are making a final decision today in which 9 of those populations will no longer be considered warranted for listing as endangered species under the Endangered Species Act. 4 of those populations, unfortunately, still qualify as endangered species, and 1 population is considered threatened under the Endangered Species Act, although we are in this final regulation today, providing all the same protections to that 1 threatened population as an endangered species received. So all 5 of those that remain that are continued to be on the endangered species list will be receive all the protections of an endangered species.
Great. Thank you, Angela. And at this time, we're going to open for reporter questions. Katie, can you please explain the process for asking a question?
Thank you. At this time, we would like to begin the question and answer session of today's call. If you would like to ask a question from the phone lines, please press star, then 1, unmute your phone, and record your name when prompted. To withdraw any questions, please press star, then 2. Once again, to ask a question, please press star, then 1, and record your name when prompted. One moment, please, for the first question.
Thank you, Katie. Right, we're going to start with Audrey at the Associated Press. We're opening up your line right now.
Great. Hello. This is Audrey with AP. Thanks so much for doing this. I have a question. The release NOAA sent out just before the conference call started mentioned that 2 separate complementary regulations filed today will specify distance limits for approaching vessels in Hawaii and Alaska waters. I was wondering if you could talk a little bit about why these regulations are necessary if the humpback whales in the Hawaii, Alaska areas will no longer be considered endangered?
Sure. Well, we do consider the need to remain a safe distance from humpback whales to still be necessary for their continued conservation. For Alaska, we had put those requirements in place under both the authority of the Endangered Species Act as well as the Marine Mammal Protection Act. Even though nine of these populations will not be considered warranted for listing under the Endangered Species Act, all humpback whales will continue to be protected under the Marine Mammal Protection Act. And so what these regulations are doing is ensuring that those regulations dealing with approaching them by vessels continue to stay in place under the authority of the Marine Mammal Protection Act so we can ensure the continued successful conservation and recovery of those animals.
Are you specifying these rules for Hawaii and Alaska because there are a lot of tours that in Hawaii-Alaska waters that go out to look at humpback whales? Is there a special need in these areas for these kinds of approach rules?
The regulations are not meant to deal specifically with any particular tourist industry or other issues. They were already in place, and we determined that they, in order to maintain the conservation of these species, that we would continue to require those same approach regulations.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Yareth Rosen at Alaska Dispatch News. Yareth, we're getting ready to open up your mic.
Okay, can you hear me now?
We can. Go ahead.
Just a couple quick questions. This final decision differs slightly from the proposal last year, and I was wondering if you could explain that. Instead of, 10 population groups delisted, it's 9, and anyway, somewhat different. And then why are some population groups still having trouble compared to the ones that seem to be doing well? Can you explain that?
So I'll take the second question first. For some of the ones that are not doing quite as well, there are still some existing threats. But for other populations, we're not entirely sure why they have not recovered to the same level. But we have, in looking at the scientific information, determined that, in fact, they still have not recovered to that level. Some of them do continue to face ongoing threats that other populations no longer face. In terms of what's changed from the original proposal, we had proposed to list the Western North Pacific population as a threatened species, and in this final rule, we are going to list it as an endangered species. And we had also changed from a threatened status to an endangered status, the Central America distinct population segment. And finally, one of the populations that we had originally thought was not warranted to be listed, we have determined, based on a revised abundance estimate that is lower than what we thought it was at the time we made that proposal, we have decided to list that as a threatened species.
Our next question comes from Lisa at Hawaii News Now, and just a reminder to press *1 to get in line to ask questions. Lisa, go ahead.
Hi. Conservationists are opposed to this change, calling it premature, saying that the humpbacks are highly migratory, more complicated. How do you respond to their criticisms and concerns?
Well, we believe that we've conducted a very thorough scientific assessment. There has been a lot of work done to understand humpback whale populations, and we feel that based on the best available scientific information, that the decision we've announced today is warranted at this time. We would also note that there are other important protections that continue to remain in place, even if certain populations are not listed under the Endangered Species Act. And as I mentioned a few minutes ago, the Marine Mammal Protection Act, which is a comprehensive conservation law for the protection of marine mammals, still applies, and they will be protected comprehensively under the Marine Mammal Protection Act.
Thank you. Angela, our next question comes from Doug at KCBS Radio in San Francisco.
Hi there. Thanks. A couple questions. First of all, I'm wondering, and I haven't seen the release yet, what is the given that you do still have, you know, the distance requirements and the rest under the Marine Mammal Protection Act, what are the practical implications, the practical impact of not having them be listed anymore as endangered? And second of all, why do you think it is that these populations have recovered in this way and others haven't?
So very little will practically change in terms of the protection. As I said, the Marine Mammal Protection Act offers very comprehensive protections. We are also, as you noted today, extending the approach regulations under the authority of the Marine Mammal Protection Act. There are a few changes that will occur. The populations that are no longer listed under the Endangered Species Act, federal agencies will not be required anymore to consult with us when they undertake an activity that might affect those populations. But, you know, many of the day-to-day protections and activities will continue to occur. We will continue to work and maintain their conservation under the Marine Mammal Protection Act. In terms of the ones that we believe do not warrant listing under the Endangered Species Act, based on the scientific data that we have, their population abundance numbers, we think, have risen to a level where they no longer meet the definition of a threatened or endangered species, coupled with the threats being largely ameliorated and not at a level that's posing a risk to their extinction. And for some of the populations, we do have information that indicates they also have a positive population trend. But largely it's a combination of their abundance numbers based on recovering over the last several decades, as well as the threats that once existed to them have really been addressed.
And Doug, you mentioned that you haven't received that release yet. It just went out, but after this, if you want to email me, I'll give my email address at the end again, and I can send you that release. Our next question comes from Ann Thompson at NBC News. Hi, Ann. Go ahead.
Hi. I have a couple of questions. First of all, in general, what has happened to the numbers of humpback whales over the 40 years that they have been on the endangered species list? What do you attribute the recovery of those 9 populations to? And where can I find a list of the populations that are still endangered and those that are not?
Sure. So in terms of a list of those that are endangered and those that are no longer warranted for listing, they will be on our website, and we can also send that information to you directly after this call. You know, for the vast majority of humpback whale populations, since they were listed under the Endangered Species Act and other important protections came into place, such as the Marine Mammal Protection Act and the end to commercial whaling, most of the humpback population populations have increased and increased substantially from where they were when their populations had been severely depleted from commercial whaling.
Is there a number you can put on that? Is there a percentage?
There's not a set percentage. Our status review does talk in terms of having a population of at least 1,000 animals to ensure that there's some level of viability, but that's not a hard and fast number, and it applies to population, not to humpback whales everywhere. But there's no set number. It's based largely on how that population, what threats it faces, what is a, you know, their numbers at carrying capacity. Historical does not have to recover to historic levels, but looking at what historic levels are a good indication of whether you're at the point of recovery, whether they've, you know, recovered to a substantial amount from there.
Great. Our next question comes from Elizabeth at KTOO Public Radio in Alaska.
Hi, this is Elizabeth. Thanks so much for doing this. So my question has to do with climate change when it comes to warming temperatures, ocean acidification. How much of that was factored into this decision when it comes to delisting?
So climate change is certainly one of the factors that we've considered pretty very comprehensively in our analysis. We do discuss it in our final finding as well as our proposed rule. There certainly are issues to be concerned about, but we found no basis to conclude that potential impacts from climate change contribute significantly to the extinction risk for these populations now or even in the foreseeable future.
Our next question comes from Margie Bowman at Fisherman's News. Margie?
I have not received your news release, and I just sent you two requests for that, Jenny. The questions that I had actually have been answered by the previous questions asked, so thank you.
Okay. Thank you. We will send that forward that to you, Margie. The next question comes from Virginia at Science Magazine.
Thank you. Thanks for doing this. Most of my questions have been answered, too. I'm just curious, though, on the issue of climate change. Is that something that you're going to be continuing to monitor specifically for these for all of the populations or for these that are the particular ones that are being delisted today?
As a general matter, NOAA Fisheries is trying to assess the potential impact of climate change on all of the species for which we manage so that we can better understand how to manage them in the future. We are today, for those populations that will no longer be on the endangered species list, we nevertheless have developed a monitoring plan for the next 10 years for those populations to continue to assess their status. That monitoring plan is not specifically targeted at climate change, but it's certainly going to look at the health of those populations. And if there are any changes in those populations, the monitoring plan is designed to help us understand why that might be occurring.
And as I get ready to open the line for the next question, I just want to remind you guys it's star one to ask a question. And to loop back to something that Ann Thompson had said, I also have a map available to help you all visualize where the populations are located and where they move around. So anybody can email me after for that as well. So the next question comes from Lisa at the Juneau Empire. Lisa, go ahead.
Hi, thanks for taking my question. I was just wondering when humpback whales were were listed as endangered in 1970, what was the estimate of humpback whales at that time?
At the time they were listed, there were a number of large whale species that were put on the endangered species list when the ESA was passed. We didn't have specific population abundance estimates at that time, but it was well known that humpback whales, as well as many other species of large whales, had been severely depleted due to commercial whaling.
Our next question comes from Erin Kinney at Mercury News. Erin, we're opening your mic right now. Go ahead.
Hi, thanks. Could you tell me who, if anybody, still hunts, what countries still hunt humpback whales? And also, this is sort of just a detailed question, but is NOAA working with other countries or agencies globally? Why does this apply? Why does the U.S. Endangered Species Act apply, or these listings apply to whales that live in other parts of the world?
To answer your first question, the International Whaling Commission, which the United States is a member of, manages and deals with commercial whaling. There is a moratorium on commercial whaling. I am not the agency's expert on the International Whaling Commission. There are some subsistence harvests that's allowed, but we can get you some more information about that. But commercial whaling is under a moratorium, so there is not commercial whaling continuing. And then to answer your second question, the Endangered Species Act, as Congress passed it in 1973, and prior versions before that allow us and require us to list species that may be outside the United States if we are petitioned to do so. And we can do it on our own as well if we believe that there are conservation benefits that may come from listing those species and they meet the definition of a threatened or endangered species. At the time the original listing was put in place, it was put in place at the global level, so it included the species everywhere it was found. So it did include humpback whales in Hawaii, on the U.S. West Coast, and on the East Coast.
Erin, if you have more questions about the International Whaling Commission, please follow up to me, Jenny Lyons, with an email afterwards, and I will get you in touch with an expert. It's Jenny, J-E-N-N-I-E, dot Lyons, L-Y-O-N-S, at NOAA, N-O-A-A, dot gov. A reminder, again, just press star 1 if you'd like to get in line for a question. Our line is getting shorter. Yurit, we're back to you with a follow-up question from Alaska Dispatch News. Go ahead.
Hi, thank you. I was wondering, the breakdown into the 14 distinct population segments, have there been previous to this effort a breakdown into distinct population segments? And then secondly, those segments that are recovered, the cessation of commercial whaling is pretty much considered the reason for the recovery, but what are the existing threats that are affecting the others, those other five population segments?
I'm going to turn this question over to Marta Namick, who can describe the some of the ongoing threats to those that are continue to be listed as threatened or endangered under the Endangered Species Act. In terms of your first question of distinct population segments, we do have the authority under the Endangered Species Act to list species either at a subspecies or a distinct population segment. So we do have, as an agency, multiple listings where we have some populations of a species listed where other populations are not. Samarta, do you want to talk about the specific threats to some of the populations that are listed?
Sure, thanks, Angie. The first one that is listed as endangered is the Cape Verde Islands, Northwest Africa one, and for that one, we don't have a lot of information, and we're really taking the best approach by leaving it as endangered. We just don't know how many there are. We think there's very few, and there are many threats out there, and we have no reason to change its current status. For the Central America population, vessel collisions and fishing gear entanglements are still threatening that population, and because of its lower numbers, we had an updated estimate of 411 only instead of 500 to 600 that we got at the proposed rule stage. So we really considered those threats. They may moderately increase decrease the population growth rate of that population. Similarly, Mexico, that population is also threatened by fishing gear entanglements. And as Angie mentioned earlier, we did get a revised abundance estimate, which was much lower than we had previously thought. Before it was 6,000 to 7,000, and now it's about 3,200. And even though that's not below that threshold that we use as a guideline, because of the really different population number and the uncertainty about its population trend, we decided to list it as threatened, and the fishing gear entanglements as well. Then the Western North Pacific population has quite a few threats out there. It's composed of two populations that our scientific team came up with, and we combined them because the second part of that population didn't have a lot of information, and we didn't even know where they breed. So the Okinawa Philippines, we know a little bit more about, and then the second West Pacific population, we hardly know anything about. So that we had to be careful about what to do with it. But for the Okinawa Philippines portion of it, energy exploration and development is a moderate threat. Whaling is still a moderate threat because some information we have in Japan and Korea of fishing gear entanglement being an incentive. That's not clear, but it's suspected illegal or unreported whaling population. They're allowed to commercially sell the ones that are that die when they're entangled in fishing gear. Sorry for that confusion. And then the vessel collisions is the other big threat out there. And as I mentioned, fishing gear entanglement is a really high threat to this population as opposed to just a moderate threat. Then finally, the Arabian Sea population. That is a very small population. We think it's under 88. We just don't know for sure. But energy exploration and development is considered to be a very high-risk threat, as well as fishing gear entanglements. And then also disease and vessel collisions are also a moderate threat for this population, as well as climate change in this case, because the Arabian Sea population has nowhere to go. It's landlocked, so it cannot swim further north. And so, therefore, we thought climate change also added to its risk of extinction.
Thank you. And star one to ask a question. We had a couple of one or two questions on there that some of you all withdrew. I'm not sure if you had your question answered, but we do have a follow-up now from Margie Bowman at Fisherman's News.
Yeah. I wonder if you could I did get the news release. Thank you. I was wondering if you had a complete list of the all the populations of the humpback whales, which was not included on here. And if I missed it, what are the major threats at this time to the Bering Sea and Aleutian Island populations, please?
Margie, I will turn around a map to you that lists the populations, and then back to Angela and Marta, if you had anything to add there.
Okay. Yes, for you said the Bering Sea and the Alaska or Aleutian Islands, right? So the Western North Pacific population feeds in the Aleutian Islands along as well as Russia. And so that population still has the threats of, make sure that I get that right here. yeah, this one. I already talked about the threats that that has. It has the fishing gear entanglements and the vessel collisions. Fishing gear entanglements being a high risk, high threat, and vessel collisions a moderate threat, as well as whaling and energy exploration, because we can't just consider the threats in Alaska, because they do breed down in Okinawa and the Philippines and then come up and feed in Alaskan waters. For the Central America, the Mexico population also goes to the Bering Sea and the Gulf of Alaska, and so that population, I already mentioned, has a threat of vessel collisions and fishing gear entanglements. Those are moderate threats. And then finally, the Hawaii population, which is not listed, still has those threats, of course, but they don't seem to be changing their course in increasing population size. The only threat we did identify as a moderate threat for the Hawaii population is fishing gear entanglements. So, but the numbers are so high for that population that it did not warrant listing.
Yaris Rosen, we have a follow-up from you at Alaska Dispatch News. Go ahead.
Yeah, hi. This is just I'm just trying to get this on the distinct population segments. I understand that it's allowed, but I was wondering, is the 14 distinct population segments new with this effort? And I know it was in the proposal, but have there been distinct population segments for the humpback whales prior to this review?
No, there have not. Up until this review, humpback whales were listed under the Endangered Species Act as a single species.
That was Angela speaking, if you're quoting. So Audrey at the Associated Press, go ahead.
Thank you. Yes, I was wondering, do you have a population estimate for the Hawaii population?
Yes, we do. That population estimate is 11,398, which is a revision from what we had before. It's updated. We had a new paper in 2016, which considered used photo ID and genetics information from both the feeding and the breeding areas, which we think has improved less a smaller bias in the estimate. And it's increasing at a rate of 5.5 to 6%.
That was Marta speaking. So, again, star one to ask a question. Virginia at Science Magazine, back to you.
Yes,
thank you. You'd mentioned that this, I believe it was the Arabian Sea population, that they were also had either a moderate or high threat from disease. I wondered what type of disease and what is the source of it. Do you have any information on that?
No, there was no specific information provided, I don't think, by the team that studied this, but because it's a small population and it's sort of trapped in that Arabian Sea area, it's more susceptible to threats because it's just, it's concentrated there and they don't move anywhere to go breed and feed. They do all of that in the one area.
Lisa at the Juneau Empire, your mic is open.
Hi, I just wanted to clarify. So before these 14 DPSs, humpback whales were listed as one species. The DPSs aren't splitting the species up, though. They're just seeing that there's 14 segments within the species, right?
Yeah, so we looked this is Angela. We looked comprehensively at the species, and we determined that there were 14 populations as meeting the definition under the Endangered Species Act of a distinct population segment. So that encompasses all animals, humpback whales, that are at the species level. So there are no populations or animals that are not included in one of these 14 distinct population segments. So it does comprehensively cover the entire species.
I'm showing no questions in line right now. If you do have a question, press star one. And Lisa, if you had a follow-up to your, Marta would like to, I think, add to what was said to that last question.
Yes, I just checked the details on the Arabian Sea DPS population a little bit, and there were a few specifics mentioned as to disease. Tattoo skin lesions were observed in some of the whales that were photo-identified from Oman. And while that's not thought to be a common cause of adult mortality, it has been suggested that this disease may differentially kill young whales and that haven't gained immunity yet. And so the authors of the study that suggested this said the disease may be more prevalent in marine mammal populations that experience chronic stress and or are exposed to pollutants that suppress the immune system. And they do experience stress in this area, this small area.
And it looks like Lisa did get back in line to ask that follow-up question to your question. So go ahead, Lisa. You're open.
Yeah, this is. I wasn't sure if this was mentioned already. Thanks for the estimate on the Hawaii DPS. What's the estimate for the Mexico DPS and the Western North Pacific DPS?
Okay, the Western North Pacific DPS is estimated to be about 1,059, and that was, again, updated because this study that updated the population estimates updated all the estimates in the North Pacific. And that's not much different from the previous estimate of 1,100. And then the Mexico DPS, instead of 6,000 to 7,000, the updated estimate is about 3,264. And for the Central America, you asked, I think, Central America is 411 only instead of 500 to 600. And again, we don't know the population trend for that either, so we don't know whether it's increasing, stable, or decreasing.
Peter at the San Francisco Chronicle. Go ahead.
Yes, hi. Thanks. I'm wondering if you could talk a little bit about the North Pacific, and I believe that's the population that goes along the West Coast past San Francisco. At least that's what I'm asking about. Can you tell me a little bit about, that population and what the decision was there and why?
Yes, you're talking about probably a combination of two populations. That's the Mexico population and the Central America population. And so for the Mexico population, we did originally not propose it to be threatened or endangered, but because of the revised abundance estimate, we reconsidered that, and since it was significantly lower than we previously thought, about only 50% greater than the size that the team that looked at this considered sufficient to demonstrate that it wasn't at risk. And that, along with the fact that we didn't have firm data to establish a population abundance trend, and also we did highlight in this final rule that the numbers, the thresholds that we have there, are only general guidelines. So while this Mexico population is still at 3264, it's still because of the revised estimate being so much lower than we thought, and then in light of the fishing gear entanglement that moderately reduces the growth rate of the species of this population, we just decided it was a better idea to list that one as threatened. Then the Central America population is the other one, and that one is at a very low abundance. We had already proposed to list it as threatened, and we reconsidered that in this case when just because the 500 to 600 abundance was just at that threshold that the team thought was between moderate risk and high risk. And since there's so much uncertainty around those population estimates always, we reconsidered our proposal and decided to go ahead and list it as endangered. And then we received the updated abundance estimate, which brought it down to 411, and that confirmed what we did. We thought, well, we went the right way with that.
Audrey at the Associated Press.
Yes, hi. I was wondering if you could tell me what population segments are found in Alaska waters.
Yes. Those populations that are found in Alaskan waters are the Western North Pacific one, the Mexico one, and the Hawaii one. So there will be mixing of listed and non-listed populations there. And our Alaska region is going to have to use a proportional approach to decide what population is being affected by different things that may happen, like vessel strikes or fishing gear entanglements.
And I am showing no questions in the queue right now. If you do have a question, press star one. We have a little more time set aside to speak with our experts about this while you have them on the line. So if you have a question, press star one. Yaris. You are open again.
Okay, thanks. Just on that, what Marta just said, so in Alaska, you know, from a practical standpoint, when people are trying to abide by the Endangered Species Act, I guess you don't really know which whale, when you see a whale, you don't really know if it's a Mexico or Hawaii or, you know, Western North Pacific whale. So how is that going to work for managers?
So this is Angela. So I think it's also important to remember that they'll all still be protected on the Marine Mammal Protection Act. So for ordinary citizens who are, you know, undertaking activities, many of the protections that these animals got under the Endangered Species Act, they still get under the Marine Mammal Protection Act. What Marta was referring to is largely deals with when we have federal agencies who, including ourselves, who are managing fisheries, and there may be interactions with whales. We are going to be looking at, it is difficult to determine which population individual whales may be from, but we are going to take the information that we have about what their known abundance level is, where we think those animals may be, and develop a proportional approach to try and determine, based on that way, whether we believe that some of those animals may be, that are being impacted, may be listed under the Endangered Species Act.
We had several of you pop up with questions. So our next question is from Carla at the Huffington Post. Carla.
Hi. Thanks for your time today. I just wanted to make clear, before this announcement, the humpback whales were listed under one species. Is that correct?
Yes.
And will these population numbers in the DPS estimate that Marta was talking about be published anywhere online?
The population estimates should be, we will have a link to species that are not warranted. It's not there quite yet, but we're working on putting them there. We have different information, you know, which ones are delisted, which ones are proposed for listing. There is a link to not warranted ones, and they'll be listed there. And the map that went out with the press release, I think, also has a color code for the ones that are not listed along with a legend that shows you the names of those populations.
Elizabeth Jenkins at KTOO Public Radio Alaska.
Hi, yeah, I just wanted to make sure I understood something. So for the five populations that are still under the endangered species list, when it comes to numbers, what types of things put them on that list?
I mean, in terms of population abundance numbers, as we said a few times, there's no set criteria, but populations that range anywhere between 500 and 1,000 animals are certainly animals that we feel warrant listing under the Endangered Species Act. If there are populations above 1,000 animals, they may or may not warrant listing based on how the threats are impacting those populations. For a number of the populations that we've determined are no longer warranted, as Marta mentioned earlier, some of those are at population levels of, 10 or 11,000 animals.
Our next question comes from Ethan at the Cape Cod Times. Ethan.
Hi, yes. I just wanted to ask about if there's going to be any effects on whale watching and numbers for West Indies population.
So I don't anticipate that there will be any particular effects to whale watching, particularly for this distinct population segment, because as we've noted a few times, the protections of the Marine Mammal Protection Act will continue to apply. So there is, as I'm sure you are well aware, whale watching off the east coast of the United States. That will be allowed to continue, but I don't see much a significant amount of change in the way that may be managed based on today's decision.
Peter at the San Francisco Chronicle, you're next.
Yeah, hi. I just wanted to sort of clarify. So the Mexico and Central American populations, which migrate, I think they go between Alaska and Mexico and Central America. Is that correct? And I wanted to confirm that nothing's changing them. They're still listed as they were before. Is that the case?
Well, the Central America population does not actually go, it goes only to southern British Columbia and Washington, Oregon, California. The Mexico population does go to Alaska, like the Bering Sea, Aleutian Islands, Gulf of Alaska, and Southeast Alaska, as well as British Columbia and Oregon and California. But in effect, the protections for those two populations will not change, even though the Mexico population is listed as threatened and the Central America one is as endangered, because we extended the endangered protections, the prohibitions that automatically are extended to endangered species. We decided to extend that to the threatened Mexico population.
Our next question comes from Aaron at Mercury News. Aaron.
And so I just wanted to follow up on what Peter was asking. So whales that are spotted on the Central California coast are either the Mexico or Central American populations, and they would not include the Hawaii or Alaska populations?
That's right. Well, the Alaska population is a mixture of three different populations. That's the feeding area for three different populations.
In Alaska,
yeah.
So, again, if you want to email me, I can send you a map that shows where they're located and where they travel to, and I'll give my email address again shortly. Margie Bowman at Fisherman's News, you had a follow-up question.
Yes. On the vessel collisions, do you have a breakdown on the type of vessel, whether it was recreational or whale watching or a commercial fishing vessel or another type of vessel? And also, in the case of the Alaska populations, has there been an increase in those vessel collisions? And have any new regulations or advisories been put in effect to stop this? Thank you.
So when our scientific review team conducted its status review, they looked at vessel collisions as an aggregate. They really didn't break it down by types of vessels, whether it was a recreational vessel or a commercial vessel. In terms of regulations in Alaska. We are, as we've talked about, we've been continuing to require the approach regulations where you have to maintain a certain distance. We have had an increased reporting of entanglements of whales associated in California. But we're not at this time changing any of the requirements related to vessel approach and how they may impact whales. As we've said, we are today with this final decision also extending two regulations that are already in place that deal with approaching whales by humpback whales by vessels in Hawaii and Alaska.
I'm showing no more questions in line. So star one, we have a few more minutes here for questions. Star one, if you would like to ask a question of our experts while you have them available. And while I'm waiting to see if that happens, I'm going to, again, provide my email address. It's Jenny, J-E-N-N-I-E, Lyons, L-Y-O-N-S, at NOAA, N-O-A-A, .gov. If you want to ask me a follow-up question, I see about a dozen emails or so far, so I know you all are ready to ask me questions, feel free. That's what I'm here for. Since I'm not showing any more questions, I'm going to go ahead and close up the call. Again, feel free to call me or email me afterwards. My phone number is 301-427-8003. And thank you, Katie. Thank you, Angela and Marta. And thank you, all of you, for joining our call. So, again, feel free to contact me directly with any follow-up questions. If you want the press release and you didn't get it, a recording of the call, a map of the populations, photos of the animals, or B-roll that you can use on your stations, I have all of those things. So, again, 301-427-8003 or 8013. Thank you again. Have a great day.
That concludes today's conference. Thank you for participating. You may disconnect at this time.